All right, it is now 7:01. We will call to meeting this call to order this meeting of the Village of River Forest Sustainability Commission. Co-chair Charette, co-chair Lennon, Commissioner Vizi, Commissioner Haley, Commissioner Mazzatesta,
Here.
Commissioner Kadlec,
Here.
Commissioner Avalos,
Here.
Student Commissioner Steerwalt.
Here.
We have five voting members present. We do have a quorum. First item of business is public comment. I don't think we've received any, so then we'll move on to adoption of the meeting minutes. Did anyone catch any
There
typos
was
or?
one typo. It said AD, and I think maybe it was meant to be and I think it was at the end of maybe item five somewhere. I don't have my copy in front of me, so
Oh, yep, I see it.
that was it for me.
I think it was, I meant to type, meant to the village board and ordinance. I think the AD should be struck entirely. So, yeah. Anybody else have any other corrections or notes from last month's meeting minutes? All right. So do we have a motion to adopt with the corrections identified by Commissioner Mazzatesta?
I will so move.
Second.
All right. Co-chair Charette?
Yes.
Co-chair Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Mazzatesta?
Yes.
Commissioner Kadlec?
Yes.
Commissioner Avalos?
Yes.
Meeting minutes are adopted. All right. Moving on to commissioner updates.
Want to shout out the One Earth Collective's green calendar again. They got one, two, three. So many things are up on the site now. And you can just go there or get there by Googling oneearthcollective.org/green calendar. And also, can you hear me? I know Triton is also in the midst of it, but not sure if it would be cool to do like Earth Month is in April. Even better would be Earth Week, but like a community event or string. Maybe let's just focus on one event. Educating the community on what's offered and maybe having kids games and stuff. I don't know. Anyone?
Manolo, just to add, and I will share my screen here one second. I did add the One Earth Collective's events to our green dates calendar here.
Can we get that up on social media, or is that
Yep, yeah,
too
I
much?
can certainly plug that in. We've got a few open weekly social media posts over the next month, so I think we can add that in there. And then I know as we get closer to the film festival, we always promote that on the social media as well.
And as regards April, Manolo and I had talked with the director of the library quite some time back about partnering up with the library. So the plan was for maybe not exactly on Earth Day, but Earth Week, probably on a Sunday afternoon, I would think. I'm going to do my three-pronged presentation that I've used with my green condo group and passed out my PowerPoint deck a couple of times. And that's the one that we call it for reluctant climate change warriors, covering induction stoves. I'm losing my mind. Anyway, there's three topics there that that are covered, and I'm going to do that presentation. So I think it's probably time for me to go back to the library and set a specific date so that we don't, miss out on that. They're also going to do one of their displays like they do on the first floor, where it's dedicated topic. And they even went so far as to buy a book, a fiction book of stories about climate change, sort of a sci-fi but geared toward climate change, the title of which escapes me at the moment. But they actually, I had gotten the book out through the Swan system and it wasn't at River Forest, so they actually ordered it. So they're going to, they'll do a display as well. But I will call them either this week or next week and get a date so that we can put it in our calendar and publicize it and so on.
Just to add, for some reason I thought their calendar was already done, but that's great. I just think some actions would be there probably already is actions in them, but I think it would be cool maybe to review them and put some like maybe easier actions than getting induction cooktop. Not everyone has that kind of money, but yeah.
Well, actually, under that topic, Susan, this goes back to conversations you and I have had about the fact that you can use your toaster oven, countertop electric appliances, or instant pot, or crock pot.
No.
Well, that too, yeah.
It's going to get the weird when you have just like a single unit where you can put a pot on top.
Oh, yeah. Well, and yes. Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact.
You can come up with that.
Yeah.
Well, not even an oven, though, just a
single burner.
Yeah, a single burner.
As a matter of fact, I mentioned that as a way to test out induction.
Yeah.
Because the one I bought originally was $100. It's down to, I think, $60 or $70 now. So, yeah, Manolo, that's a good point. It's induction.
Electric cooking for different price points.
Yeah, exactly.
And yes to all those other things you said, too, all the toaster ovens, but I was just thinking of burner.
Yeah, I had also reached out to the library, like, a little bit around the time, like, you know, Manolo and Luis were looking into doing some programming for the spring as well. And like Manolo was saying, I think it'd be nice to do an event with the library focused for like kids as well. It could be a fun sustainable art project or, you know, introductory learning opportunity for some sustainability topics. Unfortunately, when I had reached out, they were kind of closing the door on their like spring programming to do an event, but maybe I'll reach back out and see if they'd be willing to do something that I could help with for like around Earth Day or just something.
Didn't they do some kind of art project where they used recycled materials?
Yeah. They had talked about, I think, I can't remember if they had done that. I think they'd done it in the past perhaps. They had a display of some artwork, so something like that again, I think would be so I can reach back out to see if we could do something like that again in the spring.
Anyone else, any updates? All right. Moving on to the next item of business. So we had talked about this initially back in October, I believe, and this was one of the recommendations from the UIC climate plans, was expanding the tree cutting ordinance to also include single family properties in some capacity. There is a limited tree cutting ordinance, tree preservation ordinance. It's limited to multifamily, residential, commercial, institutional, and governmental properties. And it says covering 5,000 square feet or more, which is relatively not a large thing of land. I think that was just meant to exempt very small storefronts. We had discussed it at the time. The discussion was to identify a few species of trees and size to protect sort of the most important fully mature trees. Did get some feedback from Brian Skozik, our superintendent of public works. He is a certified arborist. I just sort of laid out his explanation within the memo. But basically in terms of oaks and elms would be the main trees to focus on. I believe oaks was initially raised, by the commission here, and to establish a diameter size for fully mature, 20 inches is a good marker. Some species of can reach maturity of oaks can reach maturity faster. Some it takes longer. For elms, that's a pretty good threshold for a very mature tree. And then Siberian elms are the one exception for elm species, as they are not native and invasive. So in the draft language, everything that's underlined is the new language being added. Everything that's struck and through is being deleted. The bulk of it is really just in that Section A tree removal. Everything else is just sort of either updating cross-references and things like that, or it had used the standard of diameter at 12 inches above ground level, and the standard measurement that arborists use is what's called diameter at breast height, which is 4.5 feet above ground level. So I just updated that definition. But yeah, happy to answer any questions, get any of your input. Because this is in the zoning code, the process for this can be a bit cumbersome. It would go to the board, who would then refer it to the zoning board, who would then meet twice to approve it, and then it would go back to the board for approval, just like we had done with the EV stuff last year.
Could I get just a little bit of clarity on this? So, for example, if I have a small tree, okay, say under a foot or whatever, if I need to remove it, I do or don't need to replace it? I'm trying to understand the specifics of this.
For your property, because it's a multifamily, you guys would have to replace it. If it's approved for replacement, you'd need to replace it with the equal number of inches in diameter. And then there's like a bigger penalty for if it's marked for preservation and it's still removed anyway.
Okay.
That's all laid out sort of in the text.
Yeah, I was reading it, but I just found it a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm wondering about, because there doesn't, maybe I missed something, but there doesn't seem to be a provision. When a tree is taken down because it's diseased, sometimes you're not supposed to plant in the same spot for a period of time.
That is correct. So
does that factor
the replacement
in
or requirements don't have to be in the exact same spot.
Okay.
So it can be a fee in lieu of, which then goes to the parkway tree planting, or it can be just other locations on the property.
Okay.
Typically, a tree is removed from one location and then smaller trees are planted elsewhere on the property.
The idea is we just want to
Keep
the number of trees either constant or more, but
yes,
not less. Okay.
But this only applies to the two species, oak and elm.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So that kind of gets at my question, which is towards the end on the replacement trees. So, for example, if you removed a tree that was 30 to 35 inches, it says replace it with 11 trees. I mean, for nearly every property, that would be unrealistic, wouldn't it?
Yes. So this, as it exists now, that applies to just these commercial multifamily institutional properties.
But I wonder if we need to revisit this for if we're going to apply it to residential. I mean, otherwise you're imposing a fee, which. Yeah, I think we should at least discuss it because, I mean, 11 trees. I mean, even 7 trees for most lots would be a lot.
I would open this up to you guys in terms of, is there some sort of threshold? Would it just be an equal number of inches replaced, or
The residential one is really limited to a lot of you know, if it's disease, is bumping against a house or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I would just make it one for one.
That seems reasonable. Because if you could accommodate the tree to begin with, then it seems logical that you could maybe accommodate a replacement.
And so in the language that I do have drafted, the replacement is not required if it meets one of the conditions of approval, the A2 10-24-5A2. So there's tree removal, approval required, and then conditions for approval. And so
where's that?
Is it scroll? So that
I got there yet?
Right there. Yeah. So that's two and that's three. So it's a bit confusing. I had to sort of understand this is currently for the, just for shorthand, I'm going to say institutional properties that have to meet this. Trees approved for removal, which meet any of those criteria, an equal number of inches in replacement trees, diameter inches has to be met. And then the chart you were referring to is if they remove or damage a tree that's marked for preservation. So that's sort of, there's already like a sort of one-to-one replacement requirement for institutional properties, even if they meet this criteria. How I had initially drafted this, just sort of based on the initial feedback discussion, was to make it sort of as minimally invasive and not have to sort of penalize people for removing a diseased tree from there.
So E, for example, where it says location of proposed structure. So if somebody bought a lot, knocked down the home and said they wanted to build a bigger house and you had to knock down four mature oak trees, is that approved because they want to put a structure there? That
if it met the unreasonable economic hardship standard that the zoning board would have to approve for that expansion.
I guess I'm having a hard time even on an institutional property with the exchange rate. We have a big tree. Now, we're not going to take it down because it costs too much money, but it's growing underneath our garage and it's upending the floor.
That would
be, should never have been allowed to grow where it is.
So you'd have an exclusion under B, safety hazard to building.
Okay. So that means I wouldn't have to plant 11 trees or whatever. Yeah, but I couldn't plant 11 trees on my property if I wanted to. Our property, I mean, there's houses, big houses in River Forest that have bigger lots than our condo does.
So I guess just you already said this at the beginning, so I'm just reiterating. So basically you took the preservation ordinance that applied to properties and just, yep. Yeah. So
I just sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
I added one sentence. And if we wanted the sort of replacement rate for single family residential homes to be at a sort of lesser rate, that could,
I think it would have to. It just seems like it. And can you explain to me? I don't understand the 1 inch for 1 inch. So you have a 36 inch tree, 36 diameter. What would that entail? What would a 1 inch for each 1 inch means? You plant another 30?
It would need to the sum of the trees.
Oh, sum of all the trees. Okay. So not in one tree. Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah. That would presumably be 12 3-inch diameter trees would be the sort of, for a 36 inch, the equivalent.
But does that seem realistic for a home property? I mean, I agree with Gary. The one for one seems to be, I don't know, when you're planting a new tree, all right, it seems to me that there's a maximum size that you're going to get can be planted. Obviously, you can't replace a 36-inch tree with a 36-inch tree. So if it's one for one, you can't really apply the inches, you know, or exchange rate for a single family
home. Did you look at any other villages that have something similar?
Yes, and I think I had even included some examples back in our initial one. And yeah, I think the sort of initial reaction was that we didn't want it to be too punitive for single family residents, because some of the other communities were had some pretty robust tree preservation, tree protection ordinances. So yeah, I had largely kept the sort of same framework in place with just what we had that existed. But yeah. If you all feel this portion needs to be amended further, we can absolutely do that, and I can incorporate that into any final draft that goes to the board.
Yeah, I think it'd be tough on a homeowner to have to do the multiple trees. So I'd be in favor of a one for one. But are we also talking a elm for an elm or an oak for an oak? Is that what this implies, or just any tree?
I think it would need to be, and there is existing language in here, that it would need to be, there is somewhere else, an approved species list.
Okay.
So
it's so anything off of that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because, you know, best practice is you don't plant trees too close together. So if somebody's got to do multiple trees to replace one on a single family home, right, even the big lots in North River Forest.
Because you have to leave room for their growth.
Yeah, that's not going
to
work.
Do you think working up to three trees would be reasonable for? I'm thinking like maybe condense these. So, you know, like 6 to 19 is one tree, 20 to 29 is two, and 30 and above is three.
Well, if even, I were to go back and look at my lot,
even,
you know, park.
Even three trees.
If I took down the one big tree, I couldn't have put three trees in there.
And how this is written now, 6 to 19 would still not be applicable to single family houses.
You're right. But we're just looking over 20.
20 and
so.
Over, yes.
So we should get rid of those two lines either way, right? Or
that still applies for institutional.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, I see. Because you're folding it into what sort of.
This is the existing language.
And does anybody.
I would need to create a separate subsection for this, would have to be for institutional properties, and then another subparagraph B of exchange rate for single family properties.
And does anybody adhere to this? Like, for example, I know that the park district took down quite a few trees when they did. It doesn't seem like they replaced anywhere near this number of trees.
I don't know. I'm again not super familiar with this and the general process of things that go before the zoning board. That is the last paragraph here.
So if they paid, is the idea that trees would be planted somewhere else?
Yeah.
The money would be used to plant trees somewhere else in the village.
Said funds shall be used for the sole purpose of planting trees at locations determined by the village.
Right.
That is existing language.
But for homeowners, that's still a lot, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, these trees, they would be very expensive.
Do we have any opportunity to assist homeowners, not help pay for the tree, but if I assume the village can buy trees at somewhat of a discount compared to individuals, is there any possibility of a program where we could buy the trees and they'd pay us, kind of thing? You know what I'm saying?
Potentially, I would be.
Maybe just at a certain price point. Maybe not every tree that somebody would replace. If you have to pay, I don't know, $1,000 to replace a tree, you know, we could get the tree at a discount. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if one of the village arborists would be in a better position to
address this? You know what I mean? Could we just highlight it and then have them look at it? Because I feel like we're not experts in this area, but it just, this just pops out at me as being not just punitive, but unworkable. So I think I see what you did and it makes sense, but I feel like we're going to have a different section for private and for public. And maybe the arborist could give us some feedback on what would be reasonable.
Do we know what Oak Park does?
I do not. I don't off the top of my head.
Well, I know we took a tree down and didn't replace it, but that was a Dutch elm that was diseased. But that was probably, I don't know how many years ago. They may not have had this kind of thing in place at the time. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then this kind of gets at what Luis was alluding to, that the replacement tree, again, for these giant trees, it just seems like that would be so difficult for an individual to do. So maybe it could be a percentage of the tree, since it would be replaced with smaller trees, which are not going to cost this much. So, you know, even if the village was replacing it, it would be closer to, you know, if we determine it's one, two, or three trees, it would be closer to the purchase of the trees that size, not what potentially these huge.
The problem I still have, though, is if the idea is to replace a big tree, and of course it's going to take some number of years for a tree to grow, if you replace it with three trees, they're going to be too close together. Even the biggest lots in River Forest,
unless you have another space,
even 3-to-1 is ridiculous. I think it's got to be 1-to-1. Mm-hmm.
We could do it as a variable if we wanted, like, depending on how big your lot is, you would have to get more trees, maybe up to like a certain max. So if you have the biggest lot, it could be a max of 3. But then if you have the smallest lot, it would just be 1. So kind of.
Yeah, that would make more
that's
sense.
That's reasonable.
But even still, it would have to be that when those trees get big, they have to be the proper distance apart. Yeah, so it's not just, but I think the size of the lot is definitely an issue.
Green space on the lot, not the size of the lot, and we can pretty tough to administer all that.
Yeah.
You're saying you've got a pretty big lot for your condo?
No, actually, we don't.
Lots of things that sits on.
Yeah. No, it's not really. I mean, if you look at the green space, we've got too many trees as it is.
Right. That's my point.
We should actually be taking some out and not replacing them because they're crowded together and they're not growing properly. So,
what do you think, Seth?
Just trying to take notes. So how I've got it is that we would need to add a separate exchange rate in here for single family residents, and then need to get some input, and I can see what other communities do, see what our village arborists say, and sort of develop some sort of better exchange rate.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
And I assume there's an appeal process if someone feels they have a unique situation where they can't comply. Yeah, there's exceptions and carve-outs, but if they don't meet those conditions, but they might have a unique situation where it's not realistic, I assume they could bring it up before, I don't know who, but
and ask for an
exemption.
It is in the zoning board section, I'm assuming there is, because I know in the like parkway tree one, it's basically, like, if you're wanting the tree, and a healthy tree in front of your home removed for just whatever reason, it's like pay the cost. And then there is like an appeal, but it's just to the village administrator. There is some sort of set process laid out there. It's again, much more, at the village's discretion because those are village-owned trees, and village-maintained trees.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I believe there is some sort of process like that spelt out somewhere in the zoning code, maybe just not this section.
The other thing I think that needs to be just explained a little bit more is that section that I was reading from, the E, location of proposed structure, necessity to remove tree in order to locate proposed structure without causing unreasonable economic hardship. If I read that, I would have no idea what that meant. So I think that's the bullet point, which is addressing, you know, like the example I gave you is my exact house. I have probably 100 to 150 year old trees. I couldn't give you the diameter, but quite large. And I think it would be very reasonable to expect the next person that moved in would want a bigger structure on the property, would come in, knock down the house, knock down the four trees. And would that represent an economic hardship?
So the one zoning board meeting I went to, there was an economic hardship issue with somebody building an expansion. It didn't have to do with trees at all. It was just they had a smaller lot relative to the properties around them and the zoning district they were in. And they were wanting to exceed the percentage of square foot that the home could cover on the lot. And it was just by a small fraction, but it still needed to go in front of the zoning board. And there was debate among the zoning board of if this constituted economic hardship. And basically the determination was it was approved because they were not permitted to build to the same square footage as everyone else in their zoning district. So it was approved on that condition. So it's things like that that sort of they determine economic hardship on.
So which of these would address a knockdown and what the law, what the zone would, the code would say?
So again, I'm sort of envisioning a situation like that where there's, you know, limited lot structure and the person taking out this tree is the only way to sort of expand and they're, you know, there's been deemed some sort of economic hardship in the necessitation of that expansion. And I can look further into that.
Yeah, okay. Just,
I guess the challenge I have with the, as it applies to the commercial or institutional, is they're talking about the size of the property. You know, I think it says 5,000.
Yep.
Yeah. I think, to Gary's comment that he made before, I think the size of the green space is what should govern. Because if you think about it, if you've got a 5,000 square foot lot and most of it's covered by a building, I can tell you right now, the building I'm in, I think the amount of green space we've got is less than what I had at my house. And my house was a 1950 split level. It wasn't a huge lot, but I think I had more green space than we do at our condo. I think I also had more trees. But I don't suppose we're going to change that. I'm just being a wise guy and making a comment.
Anyway, so maybe just look into this a little further and we can revisit.
I'm assuming the plan is to table this until next month, and then we'll come back with something.
Yeah, with some feedback.
All right. And then moving on to the next item. Put together a memo, and I had emailed you all just sort of some information on what Oak Park and Forest Park's environmental or green awards were. So those feel, you know, look pretty just sort of open-ended for people to nominate within you know, a specific category is how Forest Parks was. And then there were two sort of category awards that looked to be given out for Oak Parks. I don't know if they had, I could not find any specific established categories, but they gave one to a nonprofit and one to a family. And then Forest Parks were community organization, individual, local business, and collaborative initiative. And then they awarded in two of those categories this year, with this year being their first year. So I included both the nomination forms, which are basically identical, a news article on Forest Parks, and then Oak Parks sort of PowerPoint that they had done at their recent awards. And then the other portion of this memo, I know we had talked about potentially some sort of scorecard or action card. And then I believe Gary was the one who had made the comment of trying to tie that back to some of the recommendations from the climate plan. So I basically just went through the list and slightly modified the language of things that were suggested in there, and then listed them all out here. So yeah, just wanted to open this all up to you all. I know when Jamie had emailed me saying she wasn't going to be able to make it, she also indicated she hadn't had a time to really dive into any of it much deeper. And she said, if anyone else wants to take the reins, by all means. So
are we deciding between which way to go, like in terms of the recognition versus the scorecard? Or
I don't think they need to be mutually exclusive. Okay. These are just sort of options.
Okay.
Presenting you guys based on what you had all discussed before. So I don't think we need to go one way or the other, or strictly either of these ways. It could be something entirely different, but I just wanted to give you guys sort of the information based on that I had pulled based on last month's discussion.
This may be a dumb question, but communities that do this, how do they verify if they do it all? Or is it just sort of honor system? Somebody says we did A, B, C, D.
So the two like individual awards, it looked like that Oak Park and Forest Park gave out, it was sort of pretty clear sort of visual evidence of the, you know, gardens that these people had put in their backyards, respectively.
Yeah, sure.
Things like that. And then I think it was Forest Park's, like, it was a condo association they had recognized, and it just talked about, you know, them developing a compost plan for the unit owners and looking to get on a community solar program and trying to do environmentally friendly HVAC replacements. And I think one of them, the things was like still only planned, and they were just going to do it. So yeah, it would be honor system. There we would presumably want some sort of verification, or
well, some things are easier than others, yeah, to verify. Yeah, you show up at somebody's house, ring the doorbell and say this is an ad hoc visit and we're checking to see your stove.
I think in a lot of cases with those, it would be, you know, even if we're able to like fully verify it, it's a way to sort of showcase an action that somebody is supposedly at least taking and offer that as an example to other residents and institutions in the community.
Yeah, I agree with Seth. I could see, I think this is not mutually exclusive. I can see both. So taking what Seth did with the combining stuff, I'd even combine it a little bit further, just make some basic topic type of buckets, and those become the things you can do as part of that. And if you tick one or two within that, get your little whatever that you can display. And there'd be no follow-up on it. It's an honor system. It's something that would encourage people to participate. And the other, if we wanted to do it, would be more of that recognition reward award type of thing, where you, however many you decide to do and at what frequency you decide to do it. I think Oak Park look like, what, once a year? Both of them look like once a year or something.
Yeah, I think they're both annual awards. I think this was Forest Park's first year doing it. So
Yeah. So I could see both. And the one where you're doing the award, certainly you'd want to have a little more follow-up to evidence, because that'd be part of the package that they're putting out, just like they did in these. So
Seems like in terms of implementation, the awards would be easier to get off the ground. So, you know, maybe it could be a two-part plan to start out with the awards, and then as we work up, because it could be a while before, you know, as we work out the scorecard.
Yeah, and looking, it looks like both of Oak Parks was just held this last month. I think Forest Parks was either January or December. And then I believe the only commission for River Forest that does awards is the Historic Preservation Commission. I typically believe they award theirs in November or December as well.
Would you want to tie it to some other, like Environmental Week or one of those types of things that? The squirrel day, whatever, pick one. So you get some momentum out of those two.
Yeah, I wonder if there's like just like a general activist day or green day, yeah. But there's like so many green days, I wonder if there's just like,
I mean, Earth Day would be the obvious one. I know he's got short time frame for that. That would need to
help for next year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea on the resident scorecard is that that's not us coming in and scoring. This is just something we give them and just, you know, sort of an answer to what we could do.
Guide of like, oh, here's actions I can take.
Yeah. So yeah.
And I know we had developed the tree website, and first we've got the guides to the induction stoves and heat pumps that Luis had put together, and just sort of simple resource subpages on the webpage that could tie into one of these if you guys felt that was warranted.
Well, and another thing we could do is if we tie these two things together, we could have the scorecard, right? And then talk about our interest in giving award and saying, you know, in thinking of somebody to nominate for this, you know, look at our scorecard in terms of, you know, who stands out. You can nominate yourself, you can nominate your spouse.
Yeah, could that be a part of a future newsletter item to have a space for people to nominate, you know, someone in the community for excellence and sustainability, and then we could do a future newsletter highlighting that person through, you know, photos or an interview, or just kind of telling the story of what actions or items they're doing to highlight sustainability in the village. And then for these items you put together, Seth, is the idea to have with the scorecard, like people can just kind of self-report, check off the things that they're doing.
That's what I had sort of envisioned based on your all's discussion. They've done it. There's no even need to sort of turn it back in or anything. Yeah. It's just sort of a, you know, simple thing that they can keep and reference themselves. And yeah, if they wanted to, yeah, just try and get each box checked off, I guess.
Yeah. Could we structure it like as a, you know, just a bronze, silver, gold level thing where like if you have a certain amount of things, you qualify for the bronze level or, you know, and kind of work up from there. And we could sort these different items into, you know, smaller things, or if it's a bigger thing, it would be more valuable towards a gold
like
certification.
Looking at the item, you know, obviously, you know, participating in the semi-annual e-waste and hazardous waste collection or the holiday lights drop-off is going to be a lot easier for people to do than install solar panels on your home or buy an EV. So,
Yeah, there could be like a point system assigned to each item, and then you could total your points at the end and see. You could have a sustainability score, or you could have that score applied to if it fits into the bronze scoring or silver or gold.
Well, it kind of gets back to what Manolo said earlier when we were talking about the library, of giving people some easy wins. And Susan, what you said about, you know, well, if you start with the awards, that kind of makes sense, because you've got the award and then you can say to people, hey, now listen, you can do it yourself. Here's a scorecard, you know. You don't have to just apply for an award or be nominated. You know, anybody can take the scorecard and see how you're doing. Kind of like maybe work their way up to being someone who could get an award. So it kind of makes sense to maybe start with the award first. Because really, yeah, I mean, the end game is to get people to do things. So any of these things to get people to think about it and look at what they're doing and maybe see that there's more things that they could do is worthwhile.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that should be the goal with this, is to for people to self-assess and see where maybe they could do more, and also to learn from their neighbors and see maybe what other people are doing, and then think, hey, I could, this, maybe this is something I can implement as well. And I think, yeah, like a big goal, that should kind of be the main goal with this. I know we had talked about the potential for like yard signs as well, and I forget where we landed on like budget for those, or if that would be a possibility.
So I just briefly flagged that I don't really handle the boards and commissions budget stuff, but the historic preservation, I guess, does have yard signs for there, so it could be just easily incorporated. There is sort of a line item for sort of, I don't know if it's commission promotional material or something along those lines, but we would be able to work and
okay, because I feel like that would be nice to highlight maybe some specific items from this list, like the composting program, or just make the signs like really simple, since that's something you can't see obviously from the outside if a house is composting. So, you know, could have a sign saying that they're participating in the compost program, or, you know, have different energy efficiency upgrades in their home, or a rain garden, or like specific items we could tie to those yard signs.
Yep. Ben, you seem to give a lot of passion on this, which is good. Are you willing to kind of keep the lead here, kind of round this thing out in the proposal of something we can do?
Yeah, definitely. Great. I can assign the scores to each of these items and look at maybe what some of those, draft up some of what those signs could look like for the entrance.
First, you need a bit of a process. Okay, this is what we're talking about, how it's going to work. And then what it'll look like. And then you start to get down into the minutiae of what you're going to need in terms of budget or whatever else. But just, we've got something that we can start to move forward. Otherwise, we'll just talk about the little pieces probably forever. Another blower discussion. So appreciate it, because you got some good ideas there.
Yeah, you do. I just wanted to, I'm kind of like, let's keep the awareness on social media and in the newsletter, and like shout people out that way, instead of, maybe stickers would be cool, but like I'm kind of anti yard sign, because for the composting program, it's like, I think like 50%. Do I have that right, or is it wrong? Do you know?
It's about 20% of the village.
I thought that was out of it. That's disappointing. Okay. Well, maybe it wouldn't be, but I feel like the more we get that up and the more people fill it out, the village will just be filled with yard signs. And yeah, for some reason, when I see a yard sign on someone's house, I don't like the look of it.
I do think for the yard signs, if we do it, it should definitely be an opt-in kind of thing. So less of like a, we just send them out to everyone who hits these milestones, and more of like a, if you say you want the yard sign, you get it. Because I do know, like, when you graduate Roosevelt, for example, right down the street, everyone gets a yard sign. And I don't think I've gone past a single house from my graduating class and seen anyone with those signs still up. So, I mean, where does that go then? The landfill. So that kind of counters our purpose. So I think if we put these up, we definitely want it to be something that people announce that they want, to make sure that we're not just giving this away for no reason.
And then just touch base on the point of like the community recognition and just like sort of finding people to recognize in the newsletter. We can start that process earlier as we're still sort of building up the scorecard and formulating, building up to an annual award. And if we tie that in with next year's Earth Day, or however we want to do that.
Thank you for digging up all this information on the neighboring villages.
Do we have any more on this one?
No, but in terms of recognition, I just want to say that the LRS blurb in the newsletter, that was great. That was. In fact, my husband said something to me about it because someone on Facebook commented that they didn't realize, you know, wow, how complicated the process was. So obviously they had read that. And he asked me about it, and I gave him more information, and he fed it back to whoever it was on Facebook. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and that was all Jamie. She wrote the article.
Yeah, I'm sorry she's not here. I'll say thank you next time, too.
So, yeah, moving on to the next item, Susan, I know you had wanted to touch base on composting as part of this month's discussion. So I had written up this next memo. We've had a bit of a dip from last summer through the most recent month I had data on, which was December, in terms of compost subscribers. And then I did outline, you know, the sort of preliminary discussions with LRS about the transition to a potential opt-out compost. I know that's not something we're considering at the moment, but I just wanted to have it all sort of written out for all of your discussion. And then after that, the standard quarterly waste report is also included in here. And then, e-waste collection is next month, and the postcards have gone out for that. And then I was planning to have that on social media. I think that would be posted March 8th with the sign-up deadline March 12th. And then it's already up on the village website as well. But yeah, wanted to open up the compost discussion.
I mean, I feel like it's not really an opt-out program. If everybody pays, it's not really an opt-out program. So that's a misnomer. And I feel like it's a bit of a deal breaker. So, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm intrigued by this idea that they need an additional truck since they're already providing this service in our village. I mean, I guess it would have to span more days if everyone were in fact doing it. I don't know. Does anybody have any ideas on how to proceed?
Yeah, whenever I get a chance, I just try to plug in something about compost sign up into the newsletter and just, you know, promote that there's the cost sharing option that only a, you know, handful of households have taken advantage of so far. And, you know, we know there's more informal household sharing programs going on because of the survey we had done a couple of years ago.
Flyers like putting them up at grocery stores, the library might have a community board. I feel like that might get our numbers up, maybe. At least they're seeing it.
I would say, unless they're not being emptied, and I'm not sure how I would monitor that, but the bins in front of Village Hall seem to really be being used.
Yeah, they...
I mean, they're often full.
Yeah, people make use of them with... no promotion to it, basically. So
there was a time when we promoted it, right?
I'm sure right when it was like first put in, it is only being emptied every other week now, but
maybe that's just the reason.
Scraps,
but I mean, I open them up and it's because I work across the street and they are full. So and you know, our real purpose is for people to compost. We don't really care where they are. So You know, I wonder if another approach is just to make composting available to everybody through, you know, different neighborhood means, if that might be another way of getting at this. Does anybody have any feedback if we played up, you know, schools, maybe faith communities, the village hall, public works?
Almost like drop-off location, right?
Which is what some towns do. I mean, the thing is, it takes a certain motivation for somebody to compost, and just the fact of having a compost bin doesn't mean that people are going to compost. I am distressed when I see people putting like yard waste into the landfill, which I don't think that's not really kosher, is it?
No, I actually had an issue with that where, just within the past couple of weeks, there was a guy who had some like garland, but it was completely like had like wires and metal going through it and ornaments still in it, and threw it away. And then the garbage people didn't touch that can for 2 weeks because they were like, no, we're contaminated with yard waste, we're not gonna throw that in. And I had to call LRS and explain like he couldn't get the wire separated, he didn't want to put it in the yard waste or the Holiday Greens curbside collection, so that's why he put it in the trash, because he's like, well, I can't get it off. So yeah, I do know that, you know, at least this instance, this one driver for LRS is, you know, very aware as to not collect yard waste for the regular trash. So see, I've actually, yeah, seen an example of that within the past.
And yard waste is not picked up during the winter?
Not bagged yard waste. No, if you have a compost bin, you can throw your yard waste.
But if you want to bag it, you have to wait for the weekly delivery.
Yeah, first Tuesday in April. Oh. Yeah, and I think one of the November newsletters, I tried to sort of promote that, as you can continue to get rid of your yard waste all through the winter.
Right.
But yeah, again,
people don't have a lot of yard waste in winter. Yeah. Once you get beyond the garland. So how do people feel about, you know, maybe like a two-pronged approach of in addition to trying to get people to have individual compost, that we beef up the drop-off compost throughout the village?
Well, I like that idea. And I think you could advertise by saying, there's three ways you can do this. You can join the program, and you can even share. You can do it in your own backyard, and maybe point them to, you know, some links. I'm sure we've got some stuff somewhere, how to do your own. Or here's a map of the public drop-off places. If, you know, if all else fails, you know, here's some public places you can drop it off.
I love the idea. My main concern and only concern is animals. And there's some pretty good animals. They get into our bins when we, our trash bins when we leave them out. So we put, lock them in the garage now. But like, if we put them in a garage or a lock space or a space, it won't be accessible and as easy to find. So if we can figure out a way to do that, I think.
Well, the ones in front here, do we know if there have been any problems with wildlife getting into the bins?
Not that I'm aware of, but that doesn't necessarily mean it hasn't happened. I mean,
yeah, location. You know,
that's going to happen with, if you compost or if you throw it in your trash.
Yeah.
But I agree with Susan. I like that idea of, I've always liked that, of having kind of central or scattered areas that people can drop off. I mean, I've got these little things, the compost for composting, and 2 months worth is not even a quarter full. I mean, we just don't, it's not worth me having a 90 gallon thing or whatever it is. So we'll come up here and drop it off. So having those types of things available is great. I often wondered, though, why if they come around and they pick up the compost, what, every week during the winter?
Every other week.
Every other week. You know, why can't you can't put out the brown bags with yard waste if you wanted to? That, I don't know why they have this differentiation if they're coming around anyhow, but that's something else I'd ask to look at.
I do not know the reasoning other than that's how the contract is written. Yeah.
But again, I mean, we don't, there's not much yard waste in the winter. Things aren't growing. We aren't cutting things other than, you know, people definitely take advantage of the tree pickup to throw whatever in the streets. And they seem to be pretty open to whatever ends up in there.
Yeah. I feel like the, you know, compost here at Village Hall, I feel like it's kind of the blueprint. And if we were able to replicate that at other locations in the village, I feel like a big advantage here is the signage as well, I think would be really important if we were to implement any other, you know, drop-off sites for, you know, very clear signage about what can go in here to help keep things organized.
I think that during the summers, well, I guess school isn't in session, but there are seasons of overlap where you wouldn't want somebody dumping all of their landfill. And then, you know, the school, for example, doesn't have room to put whatever they're composting in. So might be a little hard to oversee.
And I believe Chicago has a drop-off program with sort of various locations around the city. And I remember hearing on just one of the various Zoom meetings I was on that, you know, all the locations are food scrap only. They're sort of monitored. Like, they've just even done simple things like have a latch for the lids to just prevent people from throwing garbage in there. But then they have a garbage can open right next to everything to, like, sort of help prevent contamination. And like, it's open and accessible, but there is sort of a video monitor, and they do want you to, like, subscribe to a program to be able to use it. So I can sort of do some more digging as to what they do. And I think Oak Park has a similar program for, it's exclusively for residents of multifamily buildings in Oak Park, the apartment buildings.
But no, nobody's going to stop you from.
Yeah.
Well, just to push it forward a little bit, is this something that we could think about at the pump house up north and at Public Works in the south?
Yeah.
And that would give us a south, a central, a north, directed towards food scraps. And I mean, it seems to more or less be working here. So the other advantage of the pump house is that would be near the community garden. So that might, right. Yeah, there might be. And then, you know, maybe in terms of the churches and faith communities, maybe that could be more just like a suggestion, you know, like if your faith community collects, because I know people do that at St. Giles where I go, but in case you hadn't taken that into consideration, and then again, pushing the backyard and the village.
Maybe the Green Interfaith Network. I don't know if I've got the name right, but you know which group I mean. Maybe we could ask somebody from there if some of the communities are doing that or would be willing to do that. And if they're doing it, if they'd be willing to let you put it on the map. But just the three village ones would be, especially located where they are, would be great.
Place to start.
Yeah. I think that would be enough for us to be able to publicize with the three-prong thing, even mm-hmm. if we had no others, yeah. That would be sufficient, I think. And maybe, I mean, spring isn't that far away. Well, I like to think that anyway. It's almost March, right? Because we're in the middle of February. Well, close. Yeah, exactly. Well, didn't Punxsutawney
film,
you know, it's supposed to be 6 weeks. So anyway, that would be a nice time to put a piece together. guess it could be either a weekly or maybe the monthly would, if we want to say a little bit more. Let's see. If you wanted it for the, would you want it for the beginning of March or would you want it for the beginning of April?
Maybe April when they resume weekly.
Yeah, if it were for March, we would need it by the end of this week.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Okay, so
you mean for the newsletter?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. So if you want,
why don't we gear towards April with you know, as we said, with trying to go through all different points of promoting curbside, reiterating that you can share it, and the three different size options, the three drop off sites, and then, you know, maybe giving some information on backyard.
Is there any kind of tagline, pun, hook that you could do off of three? Because we've got the three-pronged thing, but I'm just wondering if we could come up with something catchy, you know. Maybe we could give that some thought. Or something alliterative, I don't know. I'll give that some.
Yep. Yeah. The only other things I had, just included the standard, LRS reports, included the most recent, monthly report from December for the raw data from LRS for the whole year. And then, just the quarterly metrics we had discussed before that we'll continue to track and look into, and then I will share my screen again. So this week, plastic bag drop-off locations is running in the newsletter. Susan, either one of the next 2 weeks. I know you were going to write up the textile one. The other one, I'm going to plug the Cook County Center for Hard to Recycle Materials. And then next month is pretty open. At some point, I was planning on just plugging the tree planting and tree care webpage that you all had helped develop. And then at least for that first week, it wasn't going to be a full monthly article, but promote the e-waste sign up for the social media post. And then I told Luis before the meeting I would take a look at the calendar she had put together and see if there are any national days that fit in for the next month. And then as we get into April, there's typically a lot of events with Earth Day, Arbor Day, the One Earth Film Festival. I believe even last year that was when there was a car seat recycling event going on that we had promoted. There was a styrofoam recycling event that Green for Good. So I think come April, we should not have issues with all of the various things going on, especially if we can get this compost stuff built out. But if anybody has any ideas over the next month of things you'll wanted to promote, I can even shoot you sort of a sample form if we wanted to start soliciting ideas next month for people to sort of nominate or share stories. And then I'm sure I've got a couple other weekly ones that you had written in reserve if I need to throw anything in there last minute. So
if you can't find any earth related events, I can write up something about the calendar.
Oh yeah, that'd be great. Like if you wanted to just give me like a 100 word blurb, I can run that as a weekly newsletter at any point then.
Okay, yeah, I'll write it.
The date fixed for the presentation at the library.
Oh,
and we can
start promoting that several weeks out and continue to promote that one. That'd be good.
And I'll see if I don't know if the events at our library make it to the Wednesday Journal weekly calendar that they have or not, but I'll see if we could get it in there too.
But that's really all I've got. Just some general updates for you guys, because we still have time. Design for the EV charging station project is still underway. All of the info has been submitted to ComEd to sort of get the transformers for the additional electrical loads. So that's humming along, knock on wood. I did look into a few things. I know, Ben, you had initially raised the Triton has the B campus designation. And there's a similar B city designation. There is also a Mayor's Monarch Pledge thing that was the topic of a Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus meeting a few weeks ago. And so looking at ways to sort of incorporate those two things. And one of the things staffing wise we've been talking about is need to sort of completely redo and improve the bio swales along Chicago Avenue. We'll not be using the same contractor this year. So looking at a way to sort of incorporate all three of those together and really sort of build up some good native plants and pollinator friendly plants along that corridor and have that sort of be the demonstration thing, that component that some of these designations and pledges require. So,
and another piece of that, since we're approaching that season, was you were going to look into doing maybe native plants along Lake Street as well.
Oh yes. Yeah, I'll need to check and confirm with that what the plan is, but yep.
Well, I've been paying attention to the planters as I walked along Lake Street, and I'm happy to say that I'm seeing more perennials in those, because I got a real problem with, and Oak Park maybe more so than us, although maybe they're doing better too now, where it's all annuals, and as soon as the flowers fade, we have to replace them because we have to have constant blooming, which is not the way nature works. And people have to get over themselves. That's just, you know, that's irresponsible, because all that stuff, maybe they compost it, maybe they don't, you know, I don't know. But they're uprooting plants because they're not flowering, plant perennials, you know. So I've been noticing that there seems to be more of that and a little bit less of that. Let's keep it pretty, you know, every week.
I think something worth looking into in the future too, for considering the B City USA designation, is a component of that is like the reduction of pesticide use and designating pesticide-free zones. So maybe that's something we could consider as well for the village. I'm not very knowledgeable about pesticide use as it pertains to the village, but maybe that's something we could just review and see if there's ways to designate zones in the village to be pesticide-free or overall reduce the like pesticide in parks or other spaces that where they're currently being used.
Yeah, this was one of those things I was planning on taking sort of a deeper dive over the next month, and hopefully be able to give you guys all a formal update at next month's meeting as to where everything stands with some of this stuff, especially as we're getting into springtime and can start promoting information and resources for residents come springtime with a lot of these topics, which was sort of the overall most popular sort of section of interest that people indicated in the community survey, which we are still getting responses towards. I was going to close it down officially at the end of the month.
So what are you up to?
It's, let me actually see here. password.
If I says around 360 or something.
There we go. If I can get this to load.
It knows that you're trying to hurry up and get it up, so it's...
Yeah, now it's the first time ever asking me to verify my profile. Yeah.
That's technology for you.
331 responses. Yeah.
I think when we first looked at it, we were like 160 or something, so it's...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there have been some big chunks. I think it's been promoted in the newsletters and social media a couple times.
Maybe we could promote it one more time and then and then take another look at it and see if anything is substantially different.
Would there be a way to compare results that have happened after, like when we looked at it the first time, and so we could just look at the new results?
I've still got PDFs of the first ones, but I don't know if there's a way to sort of...
I mean, but we'll
break out the
But what we're ultimately interested in is the total response. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, the early responders thought this, and the, I mean, really, we just want to know how do people feel about it. So, yeah, I think we just need the total results, because then we would have to remember what it was last time. But yeah,
do you get the date that they responded?
In the sort of like, if I export the data raw itself, data. The raw data, then yes.
Oh, well, then that'd be easy enough to do if there was any interest, just for grins. Yeah, but just for future reference, I have PDF software where I can convert it backwards into readable text.
Seth, do you want to say a little bit about the status of the leaf blower and what you're up against?
Yes, so the recommendation has been made to the village board, and I don't know when they will take it for consideration. I've gotten several questions about different things that seem, I would say, counter to the initial feedback we received from the board and when they had discussed it back in end of October. So yeah, I'm sort of in a wait and see mode there. I've been trying to address questions as they arise, the best I can. And yeah, I sort of, but yeah, the plan is you all have worked really hard on this, have made a couple of what I think very thoughtful recommendations to the board. First, you know, a very sort of measured approach, and then a gradual phased in approach, sort of provided a lot of tools for what the board can ultimately choose to adopt. But ultimately that decision lies with them, and I don't know what their plan is or what they plan to do. But yeah, when time comes, I will be at that meeting and presenting to them and sort of explain to the best of my ability all of your thought process and the consideration and the feedback and every step that went into this when this, you know, first came up for sort of thorough discussion last May. So don't plan on bringing anything back here in any sort of formal manner. Just wanted to, yeah, give you guys an update.
Is there anything we can do?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, if you all get questions, you all are sort of the advisory commission, and I'm, you know, a staffer for the village, so I think I have to be sort of very, you know, measured and careful, and just like, I want to explain your all thought process in as sort of considered a way as I can. Whereas I think if any of you are speaking to the board, get any questions on this, you all can say, you know, exactly what you're thinking, because it was all of your thoughts and input that ultimately led to this, these recommendations. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay.
And if nobody has anything else, you just need a motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn this meeting of the Sustainability Commission of River Forest at 8:22 p.m.
Do we have a second?
I second.
Co-Chair Charette?
Yes.
Co-Chair Lennon? Yes. Commissioner Mezzatesta?
Yes.
Commissioner Kadlec?
Yes.
Commissioner Avalos?
Yes.
We are adjourned at 8:22.